This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
Michael K., Don LaGreca, and Peter Rosenberg are all apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours, and after that, the other 20. Those are your responsibility, and we welcome Peter back to the show. Oh, we missed you so much yesterday. We really did, Peter, and we're glad that you're back. Happy New Year to you, my friend.
You know, I'm happy to be back. I have to say, it was a little, some alarming moments. I was listening to the show for a little bit of time yesterday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I heard a portion when someone called up and said they were a Washington football fan.
Right.
And I believe Don Michaels' quote was, "Look at how Peter's poisoned the airwaves."
Poisoned.
Yeah.
That was startling, in a word. But besides that, I got to tell you, I don't know if I felt any jealousy from not getting to rip how terrible the football was in this town. I kind of felt for you guys.
But didn't you find it odd that somebody would call about the Washington football team? Who cares? We're in New York. We have problems with our own football teams.
Well, I'll just tell you what, and I got to tell you, the part that I didn't relate to is relative to what's happening here. I feel like I'm rooting for a Super Bowl contender.
Yeah.
I mean, Washington stinks, but we had a chance to win on Sunday. We just threw interceptions. These two teams can't move the football. They can't do anything.
Now, one of you guys said this during the pregame hit when we talk on Zoom. I mean, you watch a game like last night. Was that you, Don, who said it?
Yeah.
Giants and the Jets aren't even playing the same sport.
Not even playing the same sport. I mean, it's a completely different speed. You're watching an Olympic sprint when you're seeing Packers, Saints, and then you're seeing Chiefs and Ravens, right? Those are the last two games that we've seen, the Sunday night game and the Monday night game. And it's like me and Peter in a race when it's the Jets or Giants. It's just a completely different world. They can't move the ball, can't run the ball, and you see two quarterbacks. You know, the Ravens, they had a brutal first half, and they tried to make it a game in the second half, but, you know, converting on third down, running, athleticism, guys open, stretching the field, just two completely different animals, really.
Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by GEICO. The real value in car insurance isn't how much you save. It's also the kind of service you get. Good thing GEICO's been perfecting both for over 75 years. Well, the appetizer is over in baseball, and obviously now it begins. 60 games of an appetizer, and now you need to win 13 games to win a World Series. So there are eight teams today that will try to win that first of the 13 games. And then tomorrow, eight more teams will join in the fun. And it's going to be a baseball bacchanal. And the Yankees against the Indians tonight at 7 o'clock. So I just want to tell everybody, if you'd like to hear the game on radio, you can hear it right here on 98.7 ESPN. And if you'd like to see it, it's on the mothership. It's on ESPN. So we'll have everything for you. And if you're a baseball fan, this is about as good a starting pitching matchup as you're going to see. You've got the, I think, unanimous Cy Young Award winner in Shane Bieber. There's no way he's losing. He won the Triple Crown of pitching. He has wins, ERA, and strikeouts. That's how great he's been.
I understand that. He was terrific. And I'm not one to put an asterisk next to anything that happens in the pandemic team-wise. But the individual awards are bogus.
Why? It's still the best of the 60 games.
He pitched pretty much exclusively in two divisions that are the worst offensive divisions in baseball.
True.
All right? So you're not – I'm sorry. I mean, he's a great pitcher, no question, and he should accept the Cy Young Award when he gets it. I'm just saying that it's different than 162 games where he'd have a myriad of different opponents. You know, that division is brutal offensively. And then you played the Central.
Not the White Sox.
All right, well, the Whites, but, you know, still the Royals weren't very good. Cleveland's not very good. Well, they don't have to worry about Cleveland, but you know what I'm saying is that this is not – The Reds in the Central Division, you're facing the same teams. It's just not the same. It's not the same amount of starts. It's not the same amount of different opponents. I'm not saying he wouldn't have won it over 162 games, but it'd be a lot harder. And the same with every other individual award, Michael. It's still, that's one that I would not have a problem with there being an asterisk next to it.
Well,
wrong, am I wrong?
I definitely see what you're saying. I mean, you are limited to those two. It's going to be interesting to see how the Yankees play the Indians and the Indians play the Yankees because they haven't seen each other since last August. So
right.
it does throw a little wrinkle into the playoff matchups and a little more fun as well. But Bieber is the best pitcher in this truncated 60-game season in both leagues.
Yes.
And then you've got Gerrit Cole, who was given $324 million for the express purpose of winning these games. Yeah, the regular season's great, and he did a very good job in the regular season. But you got that money to put them over the top, to get them to their 28th title. So I look at this game this way. Both of these teams expect to win this game. The Indians don't lose games with Bieber on the mound. They don't give up many runs. He didn't give up more than 3 runs in all 12 of his starts. And the Yankees got Cole for this very start. So I'm not saying that the team that loses this game is going to lose the series. Obviously, you're halfway there. But I think their knees will buckle. If the Indians lose with Shane Bieber, they've got to think, well, is Carrasco going to win if we couldn't win with Bieber? And if the Yankees lose with Cole, I think they're better suited to absorb the loss because the guy that's pitching tomorrow is a certified big game pitcher in Masahiro Tanaka. Tomorrow for the Indians, it's Carlos Carrasco, who had a nice year, but he does not have the resume of a Tanaka. So I really think that the team that loses tonight really has to collect itself and try not to feel as if they got knocked out. Because if you lose a Cole start, if you're the Yankees, or if you lose a Bieber start, if you're the Indians, you're going to feel like you just got a roundhouse right to the head.
But you have to know that going in because they both can't win, right? So I'm not sure I 100% agree because I need to see how you lose. Because if the Yankees' bats wake up, then I you're dead, right? Because Cleveland can't match them offensively. They can match them pitching-wise. Maybe they're even superior up and down pitching-wise. But the Yankees are flat-out better offensively than the Indians are. But right now, what Yankee offense is going to show up? You know, and we've seen down the stretch, and we've seen the streakiness of where sometimes this offense completely disappears, and sometimes they're scoring 10, 12 runs a game. You know, they're batting around. A circular lineup and you can't get anybody out. So if those bats wake up and Cleveland loses, then you're dead in the water. But if it turns out to be like a 1-0 game and the Yankee bats are quiet again, maybe Cleveland can think to themselves, well, this isn't the big bad Yankees. They haven't woken up yet. We can still get them. We can still beat them. But if those bats wake up, Michael, then they could rattle off 6-7 in a row, and then Cleveland's got no shot.
But what's the likelihood of those bats, you know, waking up against Shane Bieber? And, you know, the initial thought when I started studying the matchups is, well, what the Yankees have to do is work the count like they always do, get Bieber to a high pitch count, get him out of there in the sixth inning, and then turn it over to the bullpen. The Indian bullpen is sneaky good. Sneaky good. They've got guys that could come in and get big outs, and their closer is a top-flight closer in Brad Hand, and they'll come in and they'll use them for 5 outs. Now, the weakness in this series, to me, I think that everybody that studies this series, the Indians can't hit. I mean, they really can't hit. Jose Ramirez is their one offensive star. Now, the other guy I would worry about, he didn't have a good season, but obviously he's a great player, is Francisco Lindor. But you look up and down that lineup, Don and Peter, it is anemic. It is anemic. If Gerrit Cole essentially is very careful with Lindor and says, there's no way Ramirez is going to beat me, I want to see the guy who steps up and is going to beat him. Santana, who led the American League in walks, has a 199 average. The catchers, They use 3 catchers. Today it's Roberto Perez. The combination of the 3 catchers on the Indians actually make Gary Sanchez look like a high average hitter.
Yeah.
So their catching situation is essentially like their lineup's a National League lineup, and the catchers are the pitcher. So what those 3 catchers did combined is slightly above historically what a National League pitcher did offensively while swinging the bat. So this Indian team is built on pitching, pitching, pitching. So if they could shut down the Yankee lineup, they don't have to score that many runs. But if the Yankee lineup gets four or five runs, which is not exactly an explosion, then how are the Indians going to make that up? How are the Indians going to score that type of I don't see how they can do it.
The only thing the Indians do as well as the Yankees is they do walk a lot. So it was like 251 for the Yankees, 239 for the Indians. So they do work counts. So if you want to try to get Cole out of there, that might be a way. But you're right. I mean, what's the number? What's the over-under? Three? Three and a half? I really think when you have Cole going and Tanaka going, unless there's meltdowns that are unexpected, three runs should be more than enough to be able to win games here. So, and if the Yankee bats wake up, then Cleveland is going to have to score a heck of a lot more than that to be able to win. So I just don't know what Yankee team's going to show up. If it's going to be the team that won 10 in a row, I'd have no problem saying the Yankees are going to sweep this series. But if it's the Yankees that limped down the stretch, if it's the Yankees that were anywhere near the 5-15 team we saw a month ago, Michael, they're in all kinds of trouble. And it's not going to matter how well Cole and Tanaka pitch, because what's the bullpen going to do? What's the offense going to do to support them? So Cole can go out there and pitch a gem for seven innings. Will it be enough if this team's not going to wake up the bats?
And both teams are streaky, too. So the Indians finished strong. I believe they won seven of their last eight. Before that, they'd lost eight in a row. And the Yankees lost six of their last eight. And before that, they'd won 10 in a row.
Right.
So it seems like they're on different cycles. But, wow, it's amazing how streaky both of these teams are. And, you know, it seems like the Indians are kind of the chic pick for people. Because I was listening to the morning show today, Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin. And Mark Teixeira was on, and he picked the Indians to go to the World Series
to play
the Dodgers.
Wow.
The Indians are that chic pick. You're absolutely right.
And I personally would never bet a dime on this series. I wouldn't, because I don't feel strongly enough. I think the Yankees are going to win the series, because I think the Yankees overall are a better team. But they can lose it. They can lose it in two games. That's that sort of series.
Well, that's the must-see TV of it all, is that instead of this being a first round where you know the Yankees are rolling, you really don't know what Yankee team you're getting.
No. You have no idea. And I have not seen the lineup yet. I'm hearing rumors that Brett Gardner is going to start instead of Clint Frazier. And that's going to rip the heart out of Frazier. But I believe that it's the right move if, in fact, that's what they do, because Brett Gardner hit .400 over the last week. Clint Frazier was in a little bit of a slump, and Bieber's got such a slider that he's going to really victimize right-handed batters. Now, if I was really gutsy and I was Aaron Boone, I don't know if I'd start Stanton tonight. I really don't know if I'd start Stanton, because Stanton looked lost the last 10 days of the season, and you're going to put him up against a right-hander that's death on right-handed batters. Again, it's a tough call, and you're going to hurt feelings, but so be it. Sorry.
Who cares? You're not worried about that. You're going out there to try to win a championship. Now, the one stat, Michael, that scares the heck out of me if I'm a Yankee fan, 11-18 on the road.
Oh, and about 67 home runs to 27 on the road?
And you've got to win two of three on the road. And just off the top of my head, I think the only series they won on the road recently was that Red Sox series. And Red Sox are one of the worst teams in baseball. So that's the scary thing to me. That's the great equalizer, right? And baseball usually doesn't have that home field advantage, but when you see something that jarring, Peter, you know, 11-18 on the road, and some of their worst losses, and just being look at the Toronto, how they destroyed the Blue Jays at Yankee Stadium, but then they go to Buffalo and they couldn't beat them. And it's the same team they're facing, so there's something up with this. So that would scare me. I'm with you, Michael. I think the Yankees are the better team, and I have them winning this series, but the one thing that makes me nervous as heck, and I would never lay any money on this series because of it, seven games under .500 on the road, and you just gave the home run numbers, which is a main reason why the Yankees score as many runs as they do.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
You know, the Yankees and the Indians aren't the only big matchup in Cleveland tonight. You've got Trump against Biden.
That's right.
In the same city. How about that?
I forgot.
Yeah, same city.
Now, history will tell you that the debates sometimes don't get the rating, but this is a little different.
No, this will get one of the biggest television numbers of all time.
No, this is huge.
I think they said the biggest number previously for a debate was 84 million.
Was that for Trump and Clinton?
I think Trump-Hillary.
Wow.
I would think this gets a bigger number.
I do too.
No, this is going to be monstrous.
Twins lead the Astros 1-0, top of the fourth inning. Greinke had the bases loaded in the first inning, got out of it. Didn't look that great, but obviously he settled down. He has not pitched well in September. Now the Twins have a run. The Twins also on their postseason roster, they had to leave off Josh Donaldson, who's one of their big additions because of a calf issue that has bedeviled him for the last couple of seasons.
Wow, right. Bedeviled.
You hate that, right?
Hate being bedeviled.
It's time for the T-Mobile Call to the Bullpen, where listeners weigh in on all things MLB. Let's go to Joe in Staten Island. Joe, start it off.
Hello, Michael. How are you?
Oh, Joe. Good to start
Hi,
with you.
Joe.
Michael, I got you aggravated the other day, and I got news for you. I didn't mean to get you aggravated, okay?
I never get aggravated. Don't worry.
But here's my thing. They're not a good road team. They leave too many people on base, and you got to get rid of this guy Sanchez at the end of the year. Got to get rid of him.
No, they might. He's not starting game one. That's not a great sign.
Yeah, and I want to point out a fact to you that you did not bring out. You made a statement the other day that you said that Tom Seaver might have been the greatest pitcher of all time.
Didn't we go over this before? Yes. Go ahead.
Okay, just wait a second, Michael. Did you ever hear of a pitcher by the name of Warren Spahn?
I didn't say he was the greatest. I said he was one of the greatest. You can't argue with that.
Right. You can't argue with that.
Arguing with me saying he's one of the greatest?
Well, let's put it this way, Michael. I would put Tom Seaver in my top 20-25 list.
That's it?
I would put him in my top five.
Name me.
This is not what this show's about today, Joe. Sorry. I'm not doing this. Tom Seaver. So he doesn't like Tom Seaver. Tom Seaver was an extraordinary pitcher. Yeah, you could give me Sandy Koufax, who was great for 5-6 years. You could give me Bob Gibson. I'll give you all of that. Warren Spahn, I get it.
Warren's
I get
good.
All the great ones. But he's
Our
in the top five. Stop
he's in
it.
The top. If he's going 20-25, he's trolling.
By the way, Don took the words out of my mouth.
Yeah. So
the second I heard 25, you go, oh, well, this is a troll.
You're trolling.
That's a full troll. If he said 10, maybe we could have a conversation.
Maybe.
Let's go to Marty in Fresh Meadows. Marty.
Hi, Michael. How you doing? Hiya, fellas.
Hey, what's up,
Marty? You hear me?
Yep.
Oh, sure.
Okay, good. I'm an avid Yankee fan. I watched him for years now. And what I'm seeing the last couple of weeks is really scary. They can't field. They drop balls in the field. I won't even mention Sanchez. And look, the only caveat in this whole situation is that Shane Bieber never pitched in the postseason, and Garrett Cole is a great pitcher. Mm-hmm. But his numbers this year are fabulous. These guys who have one great year and pitch in the postseason sometimes fade. And I'll tell you something else. To me, Tanaka was never better than a little above pitcher. So I'm real worried about their pitching staff.
But Marty, that's not true. If you look at his numbers, I mean, I'm rounding off. As a Yankee, he's like 75-40. You look at his postseason numbers, he has an ERA under 2. To say he was just above average, I'm sorry, that's not true. You know who's above average? Jay Happ has been above average. Masahiro Tanaka is a solid 1.5 or 2 on anybody's postseason roster. How do people say he's just average? He's not just average.
But in this day and age in baseball, I'm really surprised that we're focusing so much on the starting pitching, especially tonight, where these two pitchers may go deep into the game, but then it becomes a bullpen matchup because we might have a scoreless tie going into the eighth inning, and then it's going to be up to the bullpen. right? Because this is not Marichal versus Spawn where they're going to go, you know, 15, 16 innings, you know. So, Michael, how do they work it analytically? Are they going to let these guys go a third time through the order? Are they going to let them pitch into the seventh, eighth, ninth inning?
No, not in the best of three, Don. I think they have to change the way they manage in the best of five games in a row, and the best of seven games in a row. The best of three, you manage just the way you have all year. Because you can use relievers 3 days in a row without their arms flying off.
So, and because I'm watching the game right now, you got a great pitching matchup, Minnesota and Houston, right? And it might end up being that one run Greinke gave up. That's it. That's all. That could be all that you end up scoring. And there's so much with two great pitchers going up against each other. But isn't there a very good possibility that we'll analyze tomorrow's game and it had really nothing to do with the starters because the game was still undecided when they left?
And you
the
know
odds
what?
Are it's probably going to be the case.
And I said this early. I really felt that the way to beat the Indians was to get their starters out. But, I mean, and taking a really deep dive because we never, you know, Yankees never played the Indians this year.
Right.
And I wasn't paying that much attention to it. Their bullpen is really good. So you're not getting any great relief by getting into the bullpen. And the Yankee bullpen, which I feel has always been their strength, it's not the strength that it's always been. With the four switch hitters in the lineup, you don't realize how much you're going to miss Tommy Canley. Because Tommy Canley's changeup would neutralize a left-handed batter. So he's right-handed. The switch hitters then go to the left side. He's got the weapon to get them out. Ottavino doesn't. Chad Green has threw the changeup a little toward the end of the year, but that's not his main pitch. So the Yankee bullpen right now is Britton and Chapman and Green. After that, it's a crapshoot. How's Jonathan Loaiza going to pitch in a postseason? How's Ottavino going to pitch? And also, although the Indians are on a running team, you can run on Ottavino. So that becomes an issue as well. So the Yankee bullpen I used to always think was the best in the world. I don't know if it's the best coming into this postseason. I just don't. Let's go to Ron in Delaware. Ron.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Good, how are you, Ron?
You guys give some really, really great stats. First of all, I'd like to know what is the Yankees' record when they hit a home run and don't hit a home run. And the second thing is DJ LeMahieu. Mm-hmm. How many times I see this guy, he reminds me of Stan Musial when he played. How many hits has this guy gotten when there's nobody on base? I understand he's the leadoff guy, but after first inning, there is no more leadoff guy. I think he should be batting third, and hopefully with people on base. What do you think?
Well, they love him because of his on-base percentage leading off. And, you know, in an American League lineup, you're really not, you know, after the first at-bat of the first inning, you have as good a chance of getting people on base with the 7, 8, and 9 guys. I mean, the Yankee lineup is circular. So, I mean, the guy has had a lot of RBIs, too. He does very well with runners in scoring position. I don't think they're going to mess with that. I don't think they're going to mess with that at all. Let's go to Paul in Trenton. Paul.
Yeah, guys, listen, whatever happens in these games, the only thing I'm concerned with now is what Judge and Stanton were rotated the last 2 weeks. They were played one game and then sit in the next game. So I just don't want anybody to blame injuries and for losses. These guys have nothing to say. They should have been used if they're not hitting. They weren't used enough. That's all I have to say.
Well, I don't think, Paul, that anybody's – the Yankees are relatively healthy. You know, Stanton and Judge had about 2 weeks to get their swing down. I think Judge is close. I don't think Stanton is. And the only significant injuries that the Yankees have, and, you know, Paxton would be a nice third starter rather than having to throw a rookie or Jay Happ. And as I said, Tommy Canley is a really sneaky, important loss. But they've had a long time to absorb that. 1-800-919-3776. So much more to do. Keyshawn in the 5 o'clock hour. We'll talk about the football situation as well. You know, the Titans are in trouble with the they might not even practice. They might
they
not have one
until
practice.
Saturday the earliest. So how
Which would be a walkthrough. But as you said, Don, you cannot do this in the NFL. You can't have a doubleheader. I don't know how they're going to do it.
Well, I don't think they can play Sunday. How unfair would that be? To not be able to practice before a game? So can they play the game on a Monday afternoon?
Well, Vrabel told his team, if we don't have a practice, we're still expected to play. I want you guys to be ready.
Yeah, and they have to be prepared because what if they can't figure out how to do it the other way?
Well, I don't know if you can, Peter.
This is the one that we talked about in football. Yeah. They can't afford outbreaks.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Mark Teixeira on Keyshawn, J. Will, and Zubin said the Yankees are just too inconsistent.
When you have that type of inconsistency, how do you expect to go through an entire October and win against quality teams? The Yankees had stretches where they won 10 in a row and then lost 9 of 10. I mean, that's the type of season they had. So super inconsistent, and unfortunately, you know, with the injuries early on in the season, they never got going. Now, can they turn it around in October? Absolutely. I wouldn't be surprised if the Yankees got swept in the first round or went to the World Series. That's how volatile that roster is right now.
You know, it's funny he said that because I didn't hear what he said until I just played it, and I feel the same way. If they lose these first two games, will I be stunned? No. If they go to the World Series, would I be stunned? No. They're that sort of team. They're impossible to pick. So if you were actually putting money on something, would you realistically, in a responsible way, bet the Yankees to go to the World Series? I mean, you're not going to get great odds, because they're still the Yankees, and they're going to get more betting because of who they are and what they've been. But this team doesn't play good defense. They have been extraordinarily, extraordinarily streaky. And you just know what streak they're going to go on. They have to win 13 games this month, or this month into next month. Do you really think they can do it? And my gut feeling is, and I'm being totally honest, my gut feeling is I don't think they could string together 13 wins. I don't.
But I wouldn't
be shocked if they did.
And I was minding my own business the other day, listening to the Yankee game. I was running some errands, checking in on John and Susan, see how they were doing.
Of course.
And John had his whole bit of, well, Susan, remember 2000, they were horrible in September and won the World Series. Yeah, but that was a team that came off back-to-back World Series championships. So,
and had a championship pedigree.
Right, so you could say, all right, maybe they were just kind of lazy, they knew they were in already, and they were kind of twiddling their thumbs till the postseason. This collective hasn't won yet, all right? They still have a lot to prove in the postseason. Aaron Boone's got a lot to prove in the postseason. And it wasn't like there wasn't anything on the line. This 11-for-18 on the road wouldn't matter in this first round. If they played better, they would have gotten this games at Yankee Stadium, and they wouldn't have to worry about their road record until they got to the DS. So they caused some major damage. So I don't think you can relate to how they played at the end of 2000 and apply it 20 years later.
It's the T-Mobile call to the bullpen, where listeners weigh in on all things MLB. And let's go to Simon in New Haven. Simon.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Don. Hi, Pete. How y'all doing?
Good. How are you?
Okay, I wanted to make a suggestion about. I noticed that every time Aroldis Chapman comes to a game, he seems to you know pitch sort of wildly, and Sanchez has trouble blocking the balls, or sometimes they go over his head. Now, I had a suggestion. I don't know if it may sound a little corny, but do you think maybe Gary Sanchez should do the same thing that Jason Varitek did with Wakefield, because he can never catch a knuckleball? Maybe try to use a first baseman's mitt, because it seems that glove that Sanchez is using now doesn't seem to be working too well for him.
I don't think it's the glove. Also, if you use the first baseman's mitt with Chapman throwing, you probably have your hand broken.
You break your hand.
The problem is that he's not agile enough when Chapman doesn't hit the spot. Like, so if he's set up on the outside corner for a lefty and the ball rides inside, it's so fast, and then Gary's down on one knee because of their obsession with framing, and he just can't get over there. That's why the pass balls happen. So Gary, I believe, has 6 pass balls this year. The 3 Indian catchers have 0 pass balls. 0. Let's go to Tony in Queens. Tony.
Hey, guys. Real excited about the series tonight. Not really many expectations. The one thing I wanted to say, we don't have a lineup yet, but I think that if they do decide, at least in this first game, to go with Stanton over Frazier, I really think it would be one of the more asinine moves. A manager,
so you're
okay
with Gardner playing left. You just think that's Frazier.
No,
should be the
DH. I don't know how, after the year Frazier has had, he was one of our best players the entire year, how he could be in the bench game one. He does have a home run off of Bieber already. I'm just not sure if he'll extend. He had a few extra base hits towards the end of the year. I just don't see how that's fair to Frazier. Fair, even putting us in the best situation to win. I don't know. Also, you know, I do like the idea of Gardner in left field for defense, but, you know, at what cost when it comes to having Frazier in the lineup? I just think Frazier over Stan is the better move. And then one more quick point. I'm really worried about Gleyber Torres at shortstop. I think that could really, really expose itself at some point in this series. So
that, you know what, Tony? Fair. He has 9 errors. It's fair. And I've said this over and over. Watching the Yankees play, they are a team that gives the other team more than 27 outs. And in the postseason, that's death. You just can't do it. They've got to tighten it up. Now, as for Frazier, what's fair? Is it fair that Gary Sanchez, who has been the starter for 5 years, is not starting the opening game? Fair doesn't
play.
It doesn't come into play. I don't care about fair.
Yeah.
Now, Brett Gardner hit .385 and had a .400 on base percentage over the last 10 games. So, and he plays a better left field at this point than Clint Frazier. Is it fair? No, it's not fair, but fair's out the window. Who cares about fair? I personally agree with him in one sense. I would not start Stanton in this game, but I don't think the organization has the onions to do that. I just believe that they have so much invested in this guy, 7 more years of him, and you're going to take him out at the knees and not play him in this game. It would be a huge statement if they did that.
Well, they did Ellsbury, if you remember.
That's true. Well, they made it out that he wasn't healthy.
But
and then Ellsbury certainly didn't fight it.
But they went with Gardner over Ellsbury, even though they had just given, I think that was like the first year of the 7-year contract, wasn't it? First or second?
Well, I know that in 2015, when they got shut out by Dallas Keuchel and the Astros in the wild card game.
Right.
They didn't play him then, but I don't think that was his first year.
But they had a lot invested in him. This isn't Stanton's first year either.
I know.
But you can't worry. See, to me, when you're out to try to win a championship, you're not playing favorites. You're not honoring contracts. You're playing what gives you the best chance to win. And in a best of three, there's no honor system. You know, game one of the NBA Finals, hey, listen, all right, no big deal. You lose it, you're fine. Stanley Cup Final, fine. Game seven, even a 5-game series. But a 3-game series? Then tomorrow, at this time, we're talking about facing elimination. If they don't play this right, Michael, they're done after they're done when you go to bed tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's how quick this thing is.
Feelings have nothing to do with it. Absolutely zip. Let's go to John in Queens. John.
Hey, guys. How you doing? I need some advice, man. I'm a huge Yankees fan. My girlfriend is from Ohio. She just came to visit me after a long absence since the quarantine started. Mm-hmm. She's obviously an Indians fan. I legit do not know what to do because she's a diehard Indians fan. And, like, I don't know if I should go full hard body and root for these Yankees to win, like my normal self, or just play it timid. Because either way, I'm not, I don't think there's going to be a good outcome for me. So
what do you think, with trying to keep it as clean as possible, what do you think is at stake if you rooted against the Indians? Like, what could you lose here?
Some bedroom activity probably.
Well,
not permanently. I mean,
not permanently, but she's only here for a couple of weeks. So
she's than you are. Is she a bigger fan than you are?
No, she's as equally as big of an Indians fan as I am a Yankees fan. But she just got to New York yesterday.
I think you send her back to Ohio. If this is going to come between you, get her on a plane and say go.
Oh, wow, strong team.
Michael, you can't say it.
I'm sorry.
She loves you, Michael.
I would love her, I'm sure, too, but you can't let this get between you guys because this is going to be a problem your whole life.
Can I tell you that I got her hooked onto the show when quarantine started? She loves all you guys, but Michael, she loves you the most.
Well,
not to make the other guys feel bad.
She's very bright, but you got to get her on a plane back to Ohio.
I'll see what I could do.
I wouldn't do that. I mean, listen, love is very important. You know, we found that.
Are you
going to
marry
this
girl? Are you going to marry this girl, John?
Oh yeah, maybe eventually one day.
All right, so your marriage then is more important than rooting for the Yankees and keep her here.
Okay, thank you. Yeah. I also wanted to say, during the summer, you wore this beautiful, like, pink and black polo shirt.
Peter made fun of it.
Wait, so, the one that looks like he's in the
holder,
that he works like in the barbershop quartet?
Yeah, you wore this beautiful shirt, Michael. I loved it. My girlfriend loved it. Her name's Sam. She loved it. And these two, I don't know. I don't remember if it was Don, but I remember Peter making fun of you.
Peter's wearing a Cat's Delicatessen sweatshirt. I mean, really?
That sweatshirt is hard. That's a cool sweatshirt, Roland.
Thank you.
So, you know, you change like halfway through the show, and she got so upset with Rosenberg and Don. I don't remember if Don said anything about the shirt, but she got so upset because you guys basically, she feels like you guys bullied Michael out of wearing the shirt.
Yeah, it's true. They're terrible people to work with, and the shirt is from the Roosevelts. It's beautiful. I wear it now, but not when I'm on TV because I can't take the abuse anymore. I just can't. I'm
really?
Worn down.
Is that what it is? We're that strong. We're that influential.
Yep.
I respect the heck out of you, Don.
What about me?
I respect the heck out of Don.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy. Hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. The Michael K. Show.
The appetizer is over in baseball, and obviously now it begins. You need to win 13 games to win a World Series.
We're in control of our destiny. Everyone starts even right now.
I really think that the team that loses tonight really has to collect itself and try not to feel as if they got knocked out. Because if you lose a Cole start, if you're the Yankees, or if you lose a Bieber start, if you're the Indians, you're going to feel like you just got a roundhouse right to the head.
We have an amazing opportunity to go compete for a championship. Looking around the room, we have all the equipment necessary to go realize that goal if we play well.
This is the Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN.
Now, fortunately, we have not had to talk about COVID-19 all that much of late when it comes to sports. And, you know, you get this respite and you feel daring and you feel like, okay, everything is cool. Maybe we have turned a corner. And then you see spikes in certain area codes in New York and in other parts of the country. And now the Tennessee Titans, I think 18 tested positive. The Vikings have some concerns as well. Notre Dame football, an incredible amount on Monday, 18 positive tests. And you wonder, is this virus coming back for more? And if so, how is it possible to play an entire football season where the players are not quarantined, they're not bubbled, they get to go home, and anybody that their family has interacted with, in a sense you're interacting with as well, and then you play football where every single play there's contact. So I hope that this is just a blip on the radar screen like it was in baseball when the Cardinals and the Marlins had those huge outbreaks and everything settled down and they got the season in. And now they're trying to start the postseason. It started already and they'll try to finish it and knock on wood that happens. But they are in a bubble now for the postseason. They're not allowed to leave their hotel other than to go to the ballpark. So they've done a pretty good job of that. And all I kept hearing leading up to this, well, football is such a discipline-based sport, and they're so exhausted at the end of the day, they're not going to go out. Well, I think it was at the end of a work week when Plaxico Burress went out. I mean, people do go out. To think that you're that exhausted that you just go back to your house and flop into bed, I mean, that's not being realistic. I also don't think that football, with the roster size that they have and the traveling party, could realistically go into bubble. So they're going to have to be very stringent with their players. Right now, the Titans, the NFL, according to Adam Schefter, wants them to play on Sunday, even without a practice till Saturday. But there is an outside chance that they could move the game to Monday night. But that's still not that fair. They would have essentially practiced 2 days. So I don't know how the NFL is going to get its arms around this. The NFL has an arrogance about it that it thinks that it can fix anything. And you know, they had that arrogance and said, we'll get the season in. And we kept saying, well, how are you going to do it? And, well, they did it. They did it. But now that it's cropped up during the season, Donna said this over and over and over again. You can't get doubleheaders in football. And, yeah, there's off weeks. There's bye weeks, they call them. But are you able to move the games to those bye weeks? Because the teams that are playing that had the outbreak, are they, in fact, the teams that have the same bye week? So it's very, very complicated. I just hope that it doesn't spin out of control because – you know, after the NBA finals and baseball's over, Football's all we're going to have.
Right. Yeah, so what's the contingency plan? You know, if
I don't know.
If they can't go Sunday. Because remember, sometimes you got good news. Like with the Mets situation, it was relatively good. They canceled one series. It affected them for like 3 days, and they were able to get back to normal. But you had a Cardinals situation, Michael, where they didn't play for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So if it's something like what the Mets went through, then maybe they can move the game to Tuesday or Wednesday, try to figure something out. But if it ends up being something where it spills too deep into the week of the following week where the game could ever get played and you got to just scrap it, then what do you do? Do you extend, like, you take a week off before the playoffs to allow makeup games? Do you something like that? Or if the game doesn't mean anything at the end of the day, not replay it? But I would think Tennessee and Pittsburgh are two teams that are going to be in contention, right? They're both 3-0. Pittsburgh would have been a playoff team last year had Roethlisberger not gotten hurt. Tennessee went to the championship game last year. So it's not that much of a stretch that they're going to be playing for seeding and have a chance to go to the playoffs. That could be a problem. If they go the same route as baseball, Michael, that's a problem. Peter, it was okay for the Cardinals not to play the full schedule. But you can't do that in football, can you?
Do you just hope that you test over the next several days and everything's okay and they're able to field teams to play, if not Sunday, on Monday? Because games have been pushed for weather before from Sunday to Monday.
So yeah, that could be done.
That's doable. So I'm guessing that's really what you're hoping for is that. And the truth is, I don't think you cancel the game if you have 5 positives. I think you cancel the game if you have 25 positives. But if you test every day, and when you test on Saturday and Sunday, these players are still negative, I think right. You play those players on Sunday or Monday.
But what's the number of days where you can feel confident that they have it isolated, you pull the players and executives that tested positive away from the upcoming game? When do you feel comfortable that every single player in that game isn't a positive waiting to happen? I don't know the answer to that.
Maybe
question.
The answer to that comes, again, I'm kind of shocked when I read this. Heather Dinich covers Notre Dame for ESPN. So Notre Dame today had 18 positive, not today, yesterday, had 18 positive tests. They will resume team practices tomorrow.
I don't get that.
It said the program is going to change the way it will eat its pregame meals and will now have rapid antigen tests available on the sideline because of lessons learned during the outbreak. So Brian Kelly, their coach, said team doctors determined that the outbreak, which resulted in 25 players in isolation and 14 others in quarantine, stemmed from two events surrounding the September 19th game against South Florida, eating their pregame meal together, and one player who threw up on the sideline during the game and was treated for dehydration, but obviously was COVID-19.
Right. So that meant, how often do they test in college? Because if he played in the game and was positive, then he passed the test to play.
Right.
So they must not be testing every day.
I don't think they're testing every day.
Don, does the Notre Dame situation here, after what the last week's been like, reek of a classic Don drop, trying too hard, bro?
Yeah.
Oh, you know why they're trying so hard, Peter? Because they've already skipped over one game.
But when at what point do you pull the plug and go, this just isn't
working? Well, because they're playing in the ACC this year. So the ACC said it wants to play its championship game either on December 12th or December 19th. So if this game that Notre Dame's due to play has to be postponed because of this, then it will have to be played on December 12th. And the ACC is still saying, we plan to play our championship game on December 12th. None of it makes sense.
It almost seems
like they're making it up as they go along.
Because the most important thing is that for them to finish the season. Now, baseball was guilty of this too, Michael. If you remember very early on in the season, I think it was Soto for the Nationals that played in a game when he was positive. Because they tested him, he was negative, but they were waiting for the next test. Instead of waiting out the next test, they let him play, and then that test came back positive. Like, you can't do that. Because if somebody infected other players on the sidelines when he threw up, that means he played in a game in which he was positive for COVID-19. The idea is to avoid having anybody play that's positive by making sure that you test enough times to be convinced that that game is being played with all the players on the sidelines being negative. Now, what happens after the game is another story. But if a guy got sick and affected players on the sidelines, that means he was sick during the game. So are they really even doing their due diligence, or are they just going through the protocol so it looks good? But really, they don't know who's infected and who's not. And they should shut it down until they know everybody is positive, not practice the next day.
I mean, it's odd.
Well, it's not. It's odd that that's their attitude. Right?
The Titans, they closed their facility. So forget about practice. The guys can't even lift.
Right.
That's an important part of football. They can't even lift.
Now, the Vikings have not had any positive tests, but that doesn't mean that there is no one that's positive, because they could still have been affected by the game on Sunday. So they've closed their facility to make sure everybody is negative. Now, the best news of all would be is everybody turns out to be negative, then none of the Titans players infected any of the Viking players, which would be very good news considering the contact that's in a football game. But what if a Viking turns out to be positive? Now, their game is going to be affected, right? It just becomes a vicious cycle here. At least baseball, you could keep it within the confines of the two teams that play because they play series, right? But now those two teams go and play somebody else, and now the Viking game is going to be affected. Already the Titans Steelers game is being affected. This could really spiral out of control.
1-800-919-3776 is the number. This portion of the Michael Kay Show on 98.7 ESPN is brought to you by 2 by London, the engagement shop by London Jewelers. Pick up or design the perfect engagement ring to fit every budget. Visit 2 by London at the Americana Manhasset, East Hampton, and Westfield World Trade Center. 1-800-919-3776. We'll go to the calls and go to the T-Mobile 98.7 T-Mobile listener line where sports fans get the spotlight. Let's go to Joe in Long Island. Joe.
Hey, Mike, Pete, Don. I'm sorry to go back from COVID to baseball, but
that's okay.
My question is about Andujar. Being left off the wild card roster and playing limited games this season, at what point do you say having too much at too many positions and like maybe being able to trade for other things you need, when do you like pull the trigger on that?
What do you mean? Pull the trigger on what?
Like trading Andujar getting some more starters, relievers.
I'll tell you what, Joe. This is the way I look at it. This was a year where they were going to hold on to Andujar to see if Urshela was for real. And I think Urshela has proven that he's for real. That was not a one-year wonder. He can hit. And obviously he's a great defender. I still don't know if I would trade Andujar this year because you're trading at a low price. This guy's a really good player. But I don't know how he's going to get at bats with the Yankees. He's not a left fielder. DH is filled for the next 7 years by Stanton. First base is Voit. So I just don't I don't risk games by having Miguel Andujar play left field. It's not a smart move. I said that during the summer camp. People laughed at me. They put him in left field a couple of times. He looked lost. You can't give up outs. The Yankee defense is bad enough. Yankee defense up the middle is bad. Sanchez has been below average. Gleyber Torres has 9 errors. Aaron Hicks is in defensive efficiency ratings is really low. The only good player up the middle is LeMahieu. So I don't think you could throw in another bad defender. I don't know if now's the time to trade him. I don't think I would, but I don't know how they're going to play him. I just don't know how they're going to play him. Let's go to Ed in North Arlington. Ed.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
What's going on?
I just wanted to comment on the COVID thing, the Tennessee Titans. I really don't understand. The NFL had 6-7 months to come up with a contingency plan. They could have built in a few rolling bye weeks, had an 18-19-20-week season, and now, you know, with their holier-than-thou attitude, they're jeopardizing the whole league, the whole season.
It's an interesting point. It is sort of, Michael, it is possible that before the season started, they could have laid out, here's what we're going to do if we do see a spike.
And maybe this is what they're going to do.
There's
an arrogance about the NFL, Peter, that they'll get through anything.
Boy, you talk about the NFL. You talk about entertaining. Don, last night, you talk about high-paced football.
Yeah.
Mahomes, but think about it. Not only did you get the game Monday night, but this just in earlier today, this Denver-New York game, the Broncos and the Jets, another just classic that we're gearing up for on Thursday.
Right.
Starting quarterback, guys, for the Denver Broncos, get ready for the starting debut of Brett Rippin. That's right, the nephew of Washington great Mark Rippin will be at the helm, the third starting quarterback for the Broncos in four games. Guys, I know we've said this before, but if this if you can't compete in this game, you could play in high school leagues and not compete.
They better compete. I mean, there are rumors they better compete. Let's go to Peter in Woodbridge. Peter.
Okay. Don, I love you dearly. You're a Giant fan like me. God bless you. Mm-hmm. And now, fellas, young folks do get this, and hopefully most of them, the death rate is very low. How long? Now, you're talking to a right winger here. And Peter, I love your computer. I love what's on the back of your computer. I guess you really want me alive for a long time, but that's politics. How long have they been waiting for a vaccine for AIDS? 1982? 1979? What do we do? Do we hide under our bed? What do? We hide under our beds forever? Guys, what do? Do we shut down everything?
But obviously
we haven't, Peter. That's why they're playing.
Okay, but I'm saying, I don't know. The college testing, one thing I will give you, Michael, is the college testing is nowhere next to the pro testing, is it?
I have no idea.
No. I'm talking about the pros test a lot more. They're more diligent.
I think
diligent.
They test more, yes. But the college is supposed to test two times a week.
Mm-hmm. And Don, being a big – I've been the Giants since 63, had my seat since 82. The first two games were good try for Joe Judge. Good try works in Pop Warner. It don't work in the pros. The third game was terrible. What's the solution? Is there a solution? I'm tired of seeing this.
Well, you just have
what
to
– What do we
just...
do, Don?
Well, what do you do is that you just hope that you team that's in rebuilding mode slowly but surely begins to get better and prove that what happened last week was just an aberration and that the norm is the first 2 weeks of the season. But they don't have a ton of talent. I can't tell you guys that it's going to get any better this year. I'm kind of preparing myself for like a 2-14, 3-13 season. But to really judge the coach, it's got to be beyond what's happening this year. Now, Gettleman, I think, has no hope. But, Michael, I can't make any determination off of this year. Do they have the talent to make me think that this is a team that's going to be competitive? I don't think so.
They probably don't.
So what you're going to have to wait for from Judge is when they start getting talent and when they start going out and signing free agents and they start drafting and stay healthy, that we can really judge it. But right now, I just don't think they have really anything to go on. This is a complete rebuild that we got fooled a little bit into thinking was on the fast track the first 2 weeks. But week three proved that this is going to be a long, hard road of a season. But I can't judge the coach on this.
No, I didn't want to get into a big back and forth with the gentleman who just called. But
Peter,
he's aware that the way AIDS was transmitted was different than the transmission of COVID, right?
Yes, and what they did with AIDS is they came up with therapeutics where you can live. I mean, look at Magic Johnson. So,
well, and
they came up with therapeutics for COVID-19, I think we'd all be good.
Well, you know what else? You know what else happened with AIDS? It affected people's habits and behaviors in a massive, world-changing way. I mean, people literally. I mean, the use of condoms and the way how serious people got about that, it was massive. People changed. They rolled with what they had to do, and it's the same thing here.
And there is evidence that the spikes we're seeing, especially around some of the boroughs of New York, are from people not adhering to the masks.
Oh my
and
God!
The social distancing. So that's the issue. So we can worry about the vaccine, but right now we are on the fast track. So I'm more concerned about that than the spike. We might create the spike ourselves.
And I think people are feeling very comfortable, and we don't want to get into a COVID-19 show. But when Peter says, what do you want us to do? Shut down. The world's not shut down. They're playing sports. And so he also gave the tried and true, young people get it, nothing happens. Eduardo Rodriguez of the Boston Red Sox got COVID-19. He's 28 years old, doesn't have an underlying condition, totally healthy. He had it 4 months ago, 3 months ago. You know what happened the other day? He got permission to walk. He's been unable to walk. So, yeah, most people will be fine. But what if one of the people that's not fine is you or your son or your daughter? So it's not 100% everybody will be fine. There will be some people that will be affected terribly. We just hope it's not you or me or Peter or Don or our families. That's what you have to root for. But please don't live under the premise that most people will be fine. But most people's not everybody. And if that the person that happens to get it is somebody that you love, you're going to feel a whole lot differently.
But you know what I resent? I was talking about this on Hot 97 this morning as well. The one thing that I resent is, yes, there's two conversations. There's the one about young people and whether it's likely or unlikely to affect young people and horrible stories like the one you just told. But I'm sorry. I refuse to accept that old people who were otherwise healthy dropping dead in their 70s is okay.
Right,
I'm not
exactly
accepting that. I'm sorry. I'm not. No one should have to go through the experience that Dave Rothenberg did, where one day he's sitting there with his dad at his son's bar mitzvah and everything's fine, and 2 weeks later, his mother and the wife of this man of 50 years, or more, 60 years, has to have her husband die alone in a hospital. I refuse to accept that simply because they're old, which is a pre-existing condition, means, I'm sorry, that's just part of it. Well, only if it's not you. Only if it's not your family. I mean, I know it's unbelievable that we're over 6 months into this and still having that conversation. But, Michael, that just frustrates me that that's a thing we have to just accept. Well, young people, no one, we should not have anyone's life being lost be acceptable.
I agree.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 2:55 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.